From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. House Democrats have introduced an article of impeachment against President Trump over his role in inciting a violent mob of his supporters to break into the Capitol building in an incident that has stunned the world. The attack, unprecedented in modern history, resulted in at least 5 deaths. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says representatives would fast-track a vote on the article as soon as this Wednesday. We turn to John Bonifaz, co-founder and president of Free Speech for People, co-author with Ron Fine and Ben Clements of the book The Constitution Demands It, the case for the impeachment of Donald Trump. He's been a frequent guest on our program talking about impeachment. Welcome back, John.
Thank you, Sonali, for having me.
So, of course, when Trump was first elected to office, you and many others claimed that he was impeachable then. He was impeachable over a year ago when the House did, in fact, vote to impeach him with 2 articles of impeachment. Why is this latest article of impeachment important? How do you make the case for it? I mean, I know it's an obvious case, but how do you articulate it?
Well, it's critical that this president be impeached again and that he be removed from office immediately. He's a direct and serious threat to our democracy. He's a national security threat. He has incited an insurrection at the U.S. Capitol, a violent, seditious attack on the U.S. Capitol to overthrow constitutional government, to sabotage the election of November, and to keep himself in power anti-democratically. And the fact here is that this president has shown time and time again that he will abuse his power, abuse it to treat the Oval Office as a profit-making enterprise at the public expense, abuse it to obstruct justice with respect to the Mueller investigation, abuse it to put children in cages at the southern border of the United States. And this was only the latest abuse of power. But it was for many the most shocking, because here was a president willing to incite a violent mob to go in and to try to stop the certification of the Electoral College votes and the counting of those Electoral College votes by the United States Congress as established under the U.S. Constitution. But even before this violent mob attacked the U.S. Capitol at the incitement of Donald Trump, just days before that, Donald Trump was on the phone with the Georgia Secretary of State pressuring him to find 11,000 plus more votes so that his loss in Georgia would be overturned fraudulently and that he would be named the victor in the presidential race in Georgia. So even there, the president was committing an impeachable offense. And Congresswoman Omar has introduced articles of impeachment that include that separate count on what the president did prior to January 6th with respect to pressuring illegally the Georgia Secretary of State to try to overturn the election results there.
So what is the difference between that article and the one that was filed on Monday that specifically focuses on the attack on the Capitol and accuses Trump of insurrection?
Well, Congresswoman Omar's articles address both. She separately addresses the insurrection, the incitement of violence by Donald Trump. These articles that have been drafted by members of the House Judiciary Committee, Representatives Cicilline, Liu, and Raskin, decide that they're going to focus only on the incitement of insurrection. That's the difference. There is a reference in the articles that have been introduced by Congressman Cicilline, Liu, and Raskin to the Georgia phone call, but it's not a separate count. We favor the articles of impeachment that Congresswoman Omar has introduced, but we support either articles for advancement immediately in the U.S. House. Frankly, we think a vote on articles of impeachment should have happened immediately after the certification of the county electoral college votes in the early morning hours of Thursday, January 7th, and that we're already waiting too long to act. This president is a direct and serious threat, as I said, to our republic, and our democracy must be removed immediately.
So how do you respond to the naysayers who say, look, he's leaving office already on January 20th. Twitter has silenced him. Why not just let him go quietly into the night?
Because as president, he has enormous power over the next number of days before the inauguration to engage in further abuses of power. Speaker Pelosi called the Joint Chiefs of Staff to understand the limitations that might be put in place with respect to the president's power as commander-in-chief. He has access to the nuclear codes. This is a deranged, unstable person occupying the White House. And it is clear from what he did on January 6th that he will go to no end to keep his drumbeat going on trying to claim he's the victor. And if he wants to engage in further havoc, he very well may. So I think it's incumbent upon those in power who are able to exercise their constitutional responsibility to do so now, in the House to immediately vote to impeach, and the Senate to vote to remove. And not only should he be removed, Sonali, but he should be barred from ever holding future federal office again.
Let me ask you on that issue, because that's a really important point. He's already said that he will run in 2024. Does an impeachment by the House and a subsequent conviction by the Senate, if that were to happen, does it automatically disqualify him from holding future office? Or does that have to be specified in the article that's voted on?
It needs to be specified. And that is important for the Senate to take that up. But I think it's critical that he be barred from running for office ever again. He's proven that he is disqualified to serve in public office, that he is engaged in abusing power whenever he assumes that office. And I think that is critical for why the Senate should convict, even if that Senate impeachment trial occurs after the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden.
There are some reports floating around about the other perks that he would lose if he was impeached and convicted, which is that all former presidents, as per the Former Presidents Act, receive, you know, lifetime salary. They receive a travel allowance and, of course, Secret Service protection for the rest of their lives. Does a president forfeit all of those perks if they are impeached and convicted?
Well, under current law and the way that law reads, they do forfeit it if they are removed from office. But if the conviction occurs after they've left office, it does not appear that they lose those benefits. So we would advocate for that federal law to be amended at the time of the Senate impeachment trial to ensure that he would also lose those benefits. He is not entitled to any of those benefits given the way in which he's abused the power of this office, and the basis for his removal should include the amendment of the federal law to ensure he doesn't receive those benefits going forward.
I have more questions on the impeachment aspect, but before we go there, there was, of course, talk about Vice President Mike Pence invoking the 25th Amendment to relieve Trump of duty. He has said he wouldn't do it. There was an effort by House Democrats, who I understand actually introduced a piece of legislation urging Mike Pence to exercise his authority. It required unanimous consent, which of course means that a single Republican standing up to it would invalidate it, which is what happened. Do you put any stock in the 25th Amendment pathway to ending Trump's term?
I don't think we have any time to wait on Mike Pence to do the right thing. He's not going to do the right thing. The invoking of the 25th Amendment is not going to happen under this vice president, who's proven that he has no backbone, really, to stand up to the president, except in the one instance in which he agreed he needed to carry out the ceremonial role of the counting of Electoral College votes and not abuse his power with respect to that role, which of course angered Donald Trump. And Donald Trump, in his incitement of that violent mob attack, was also inciting an attack directly on the vice president.
And it's amazing that Trump's, you know, that Mike Pence, upon seeing Trump supporters chant, "Hang Mike Pence," still refuses to invoke the 25th Amendment. I mean, they literally erected a gallows outside of the Capitol building.
Yes. And you could interpret this a number of ways, right? You could say that perhaps Mike Pence fears for his own personal safety or the safety of his family members if he were to go further and invoke the 25th Amendment. Or you could interpret that he has some eye on his political future and doesn't want to further anger the Trump base. Whatever it may be, I don't think we can wait around for Mike Pence to do the right thing. The House has the power to impeach. They do not need to hold any kind of impeachment hearings at the House Judiciary Committee level. Congressman Nadler, the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, has made clear that there's no need for those hearings. They should move immediately to a floor vote, and they shouldn't wait out what Mike Pence does with their plea for invoking the 25th Amendment.
Right. And this is where, of course, Democrats constantly demonstrate how they would, you know, prefer to bend over backwards to give Republicans a chance to do the right thing, flying in the face of all evidence from Republicans who repeatedly refuse to do the right thing. Nancy Pelosi has given Republicans a deadline, given Mike Pence a deadline. Obviously, he's made it very clear he's not going to invoke the 25th Amendment. And then you had Representative Jim Clyburn over the weekend who made a strong case for impeachment, but then said that the articles of impeachment once, or the article, depending upon which one ends up being the one voted on, which, you know, when it is voted on by the House, assuming House Democrats all support it and it passes, wouldn't be sent to the Senate until after Joe Biden finishes his first 100 days in office. So we're talking about months from now. And Clyburn is, of course, a high-ranking Democrat. What do you make of that?
I think it would be a colossal mistake for the House of Representatives to hold on to articles of impeachment that it's passed for 100 days or more, or even for the Senate under Chuck Schumer and the majority leader not to hold a Senate impeachment trial for 100 days or more.
I mean, it loses momentum, right? I understand that a new poll showed American support removing Trump up from office.
Not only does it lose momentum, but it risks looking simply like a political ploy. We'll get to this business of whether or not this president should be convicted for the abuses of power, for inciting an insurrection, trying to overthrow the U.S. government, for engaging in solicitation of election fraud in Georgia. The idea that there would be a period of time by which those charges just sit there and there's no action on the Senate's part to hold that trial really is counter to their responsibilities and the oath that they took to protect and defend the Constitution. Look, President-elect Biden and his administration, incoming administration, they can walk and chew gum at the same time. They can govern, they can advance legislation that they want to see happen, they can take executive action, while at the same time, the Congress can do its duty to protect and defend the Constitution against this lawless president currently here, and when he leaves, to take care of ensuring that he can never run for public office again and that history marks him as having been convicted. That has to happen right away, and there's no reason to delay it for 100 days or more.
If the House were to vote this Wednesday on the one article of impeachment focusing on insurrection, the Senate could take it up a day later, but the Senate still needs a two-thirds majority to convict Trump, right? Even if we're talking about a Senate led by Democrats, they certainly don't have 67 seats. They only have 50.
Yes, and it's beyond, you know, the question here is whether or not there are 17 Republicans. There very well may be. We don't know that. What we do know is that the charges have to be presented just like they had to be presented last time. And of course, as you know, Sonali, last time around, we thought they were too narrowly drawn, solely focusing on the Ukraine scandal and not the list of impeachable offenses the president's committed. But this time around, the same argument needs to be applied, that the Senate has a duty to take up these charges and let the chips fall where they may. We cannot engage in not enforcing and protecting the Constitution because we don't believe that the Senate will do the right thing in ultimately in their role as holding the trial as to whether or not this ex-president coming up is going to be convicted. So, you know, there may be 17 votes on the Republican parts. There may not be, but the trial needs to go forward. And I will say that the Republican senators who refused to convict last time with respect to the impeachment trial that occurred, you know, over a year ago now, that vote is going to haunt them in history because they were responsible for not having removed this president at that time. And they enabled this president to continue to abuse his power that led to this fateful day on January 6th and this insurrection that he incited. They are responsible for not having removed him prior to that.
Now, already we know that
being responsible again if they choose to not convict this time as well.
We know that there is at least one Republican who said that she would leave the Republican Party if Trump wasn't removed, and that's the, you know, supposed moderate Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. We saw that in the last impeachment trial, Senator Mitt Romney, a Republican, voted against Trump. It's possible that those two senators might join Democrats, and it's possible that there may be some momentum from other senators. We know that it seems as though that there is more, or there's less tolerance among Senate Republicans than House Republicans for what Trump did, right? We saw that when it came time to certify the Electoral College votes last week, that there were well over 100 House Republicans who voted, and of course that's out of 400 and something, 435, who voted against Joe Biden. In the Senate, I believe it was a smaller proportion of Senate Republicans who opposed Biden's election. So I'm wondering if there is actually enough momentum in the Senate, because after all, they were literally attacked. We're not talking about some theoretical potential political abuse of power. The lives of lawmakers were under threat, were put into jeopardy in a very serious way. I mean, they were just, you know, a few doors down from people walking around with arms and zip ties, right? If they can't take that seriously, if they can't take their own lives seriously and their own safety seriously, you sort of have to wonder.
You do have to wonder. You do have to wonder what they would be thinking not to vote to convict based on what's happened on January 6th and what this president has done in the days leading up to January 6th. He made clear that it was going to be a wild day. He made clear in that speech that let's, you know, go and get them, that he was going to join them in marching down to the Capitol. This was a clear incitement of violence, and it was an incitement of insurrection, as those articles cite. And you know, the fact is that these members of the Senate know that they're going to go down in history with this vote and where they stood. But I'll add another political dimension to this. There are some members of that Republican body in the Senate who want to run for president in 2024, and they may see the value in barring Donald Trump from running in 2024 so that they can have a path open. So I don't think it's
imagine that they must be tired of having to answer for Trump's actions for 4 years. I mean, reporters have routinely for the last 4 years confronted Republicans in the nation's capital about, you know, ridiculous, horrifying violence in inciting statements that he has made, and they've had to avoid the question or pretend they hadn't heard about it. And wouldn't it be so nice to actually oppose Trump and do away with him? But of course, the fear is that Trump will mobilize his base, but now he doesn't even have Twitter. He doesn't even have Parler, right? You know?
Right. And the other point of this, right, is that those who did vote to overturn this election, to throw out millions of votes, they didn't have their way on January 6th and into the wee hours of January 7th, but they too participated in this seditious attack in that way. They helped to incite it. They made clear that they were going to take this stand, that the election somehow was fraudulent, which it was not. And they should be held accountable. And we fully support Congresswoman Cori Bush's resolution to expel those members of the House who participated in this, who voted to overturn the election results, and those senators led by Senators Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz. They too should face expulsion.
I understand that the Senate Ethics Committee is potentially looking into an investigation of Cruz and Hawley. But on the measure in the House that Cori Bush has introduced, what's the pathway for doing this? I mean, I didn't realize that one could sort of expel en masse a whole bunch of House members. Would it be a sort of similar impeachment type proceeding?
Well, you know, there's an interesting debate here on whether it should take two-thirds of a vote or a majority vote, because the 14th Amendment spells out very clearly that those who engage in this kind of seditious attack on our government to try to overthrow the government do not have the ability to maintain a public office. So, you know, I think it will be an important measure for the House of Representatives to take to expel these members on a majority vote alone. I recognize some people may think it's extraordinary, but it's even more extraordinary to think that there are members of the House of Representatives who would stay in power after they have participated in this action to try and overthrow a duly elected president and vice president and to effectively support this seditious attack on the U.S. Capitol, this insurrection. So, this vote, of course, occurred after the insurrection was effectively blocked by the Capitol Police, who were completely understaffed at that time. And we'll see what happens with investigations as to why that occurred. But after all that occurred on January 6th, then they go ahead and they still vote to overturn the election and disenfranchise millions of voters. They should be held accountable for that vote, and that should be expulsion.
So let's also finally end our conversation with the debate among progressives around the practical aspects of what impeachment will yield versus the moral or legal precedent aspect of it, right? So there's this all was raised last time when Trump was impeached before. The progressives who opposed impeachment said, yes, we agree on the reasons for impeachment, but doing so will set a bad precedent. It'll ensure that, you know, future Democratic presidents face the same sorts of things, but in a political manner. It will waste the time of Congress, who should be dealing with all these other things instead of. And then you had the other side, which I'm assuming you're part of, which is you simply can't let a president get away with what they're doing. If you can't impeach someone like Trump, then the point of impeachment, you know, there is literally no point having the right to impeach, right?
Yes. You know, Sonali, there's an enormous amount of scholarship that demonstrates that a failed coup is not only the last time you see these kinds of forces in a country. A failed coup can often ultimately lead to a successful coup. This was a coup attempt. It was ultimately a failed coup attempt. But we, as people all across the country who care about our democracy, care about our Constitution, need to stand up and ensure that our elected representatives in Congress are going to do the right thing and make sure that this kind of attack, this seditious attack on the U.S. Capitol, this coup attempt never gets repeated, and that we not see a pattern develop here where another president can try this line of attack going forward. And that's only going to happen if we engage in holding this lawless president accountable through the impeachment process and through removal. He ought to be investigated for the federal crimes that he and his associates have committed over the years, including the incitement of this insurrection, which is a federal crime as well. And we have written a letter with a number of other groups to Judge Merrick Garland, the designee by President-elect Biden to be Attorney General of the United States, to urge him upon his confirmation to create a task force to coordinate all the investigations with respect to Trump and his associates and to fully prosecute, if necessary, those crimes where they find that evidence. But leading up to that, we need to have our Congress carry out its responsibility with the impeachment process. And that precedent needs to be set for any future president, that this will not be tolerated, will not be accepted, and quick removal from office is what will happen if it ever happens again.
We'll see how things play out. I want to thank you so much, John, for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
My guest has been John Boniface, co-founder and president of Free Speech for People, co-author with Ron Fine and Ben Clements of the book The Constitution Demands It, the Case for the Impeachment of Donald Trump. We've been discussing the latest impeachment effort against Trump. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.